Dave Fleming, I need you to know that we are celebrating two firsts today. The first first is the first anniversary of ESPN Daily, exactly 1 year today.
Wow. How about a little golf clap for you? There you go.
You were a big part of that year, so I take that golf clap and I send it to our staff as well. The second first is that this is, I believe, yes, this is our first mascot-themed show. And, of course, you are the honored guest for that specifically.
I have a third first for you.
What is that?
I'm the first person at ESPN to ever celebrate their 20th anniversary at the company while trying to track down a mascot called Rufus. So I have that going for me.
This is not just any normal mascot story. This is a mascot beef story. What do these things look like?
That was really interesting part of this story is that the way that these mascots were stitched perfectly fits the scenario of an ambush attack by Rufus, the Ohio University Bobcat. He's a giant cat, Bobcat, I should say. And his eyes are stitched in a way that he looks like he's strung out on catnip and looking for someone to attack. And poor Brutus is just this giant Buckeye nuthead, and his eyes are stitched in a way that looks like he's constantly surprised by something he just Googled. These two mascots, the way they were created, they were just bound for this sort of epic battle.
Big Ten football is back after canceling its season and then hitting undo. The conference kicks off this weekend, highlighted by title contender Ohio State. But when OSU's players take the field against Nebraska, it's the Buckeye mascot that will lead the way. And we have ESPN's Dave Fleming with the real story behind the day Brutus Buckeye faced the most infamous viral ambush of his life. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, October 21st. This is ESPN Daily. Dave Fleming, I'd like you to take me back to a time where people could congregate in large stadiums and witness a spectacle. The date is September 18th, 2010, a decade ago now, and the Ohio State Buckeyes are hosting their in-state rival, the Ohio Bobcats. 105,000 fans are packed in at Ohio Stadium. The Ohio State football team is running out of the tunnel. Their beloved mascot, Brutus, is leading the pack. What happens next?
The mascot melee of the century. That's what happens next. If you were an Ohio State fan, you thought it was in bad taste and it was a cheap shot. Anybody else in college football thought it was the greatest thing they had ever seen before a game.
These mascots are as different as the schools are different, as the young men in the mascot costumes are different. So, Dave, to understand the battle of Rufus and Brutus, we have to get into the complex relationship between Ohio University and the Ohio State University. What are they like on a football level and a personality level?
We spoke to a guy who was an OU grad and was a longtime editor at the paper in Athens, Ohio, and he sort of summed it up perfectly. He mentioned that at Ohio State, there's football and then there's everything else.
It ends with an interception, and the Ohio State Buckeyes are the first national champions of the playoff era.
Ohio State is this giant powerhouse that no one can touch. And in fact, they're 26-0 against MAC schools with an average victory of 30 points at least. And honestly, it could be double.
Touchdown, Ohio State. And Ohio State trying to make this a 34-0 lead.
But OU feels superior in every other aspect, right? In academics, in college setting, in alumni. And so they are required by the bizarre economics of college football to every couple of years go up to Columbus and accept their beatdown in exchange for money that basically funds their football program.
Now, it's important to remember that Ohio University, a year ago, they were a bowl team, and Ohio State has scored every time they've had the football.
So the Ohio State University is this football powerhouse. That gravitas, it shows up in the sideline show as well. How do tryouts for Brutus work at Ohio State?
It's like getting a job at a bank. I mean, it is like it's a two-day exhausting tryout where you've got to go through formal interviews with Brutai alumnus, and you have to practice in the suit. You've got to come up with a skit. I mean, it's I got hired at Sports Illustrated with less review of my work.
Same.
Which I'm sure they regret now on both counts, but they take it very seriously. And I think that's part of the appeal of the story is, yeah, I mean, Ohio State is a great football program. You can't deny that, but boy, they take themselves just a little bit too seriously.
So who was the guy who made it through that intensive gauntlet to wear the Brutus Buckeye costume on this particular day?
His name's Sean Stazen. He's from Northeast Ohio. Whole family was big-time Buckeye fans, Buckeye alums, and he was basically just on a bus going to campus as a freshman and saw an ad for Brutus tryouts. And I think he didn't make it that year, but he came back the sophomore year and made it.
And the fellow in the Rufus costume is a guy by the name of Brandon Hanning. How would you describe Brandon?
I'll describe him this way. Imagine me as a freshman in college, and you've got Brandon. you've got Rufus. He was a senior in high school. He grew up right outside of Athens, where Ohio U is. And OU almost upset Ohio State in 2008. And he was watching this as a senior in high school with his buddies. At the time, mascot fights were really popular. There was a string of mascot fights that were going quote-unquote viral before we even knew what going viral was. Watching the Bobcats get beat by Ohio State and having all these viral videos in his teenage boy brain, he had this sort of mascot, beautiful mind moment. You know, it was like the clouds cleared and he had a moment of clarity and he was like, I'm going to go to OU, I'm going to become Rufus, and I'm going to ambush Brutus. Basically my hero.
Yeah. So he gets the Rufus job and he's on his way. He's putting real work into his goal of getting Brutus the following year. But there's a big snag in the plan come sophomore year. What happened?
Well, is it a snag? I'm not sure. If we go through the whole story, this is part of the genius. But Brandon decides to drop out of school right before his sophomore year begins in 2010. And so his plans to go through with the attack on Brutus are momentarily scuttled because he can't play Rufus. But out of the blue, the OU cheerleading coach calls him, not knowing that he's dropped out of school, and asks him if he'll be, will you be my Rufus again? And Brandon decides there's no need to really reveal whether I'm in school or not, and takes the job. And the plan is not only back on, he's now immune from any kind of punishment or prosecution. Again, genius.
So this long-awaited day of reckoning arrives on September 18th, 2010. And the aforementioned Brandon Hanning, who is no longer a student at Ohio University at this point, he boards the team bus on the way to Columbus. And what does he tell the team once he's on that bus?
I love this kid so much. They're like, okay, we're ready for our trip. He's like, I'm going to beat up Brutus. Everyone just says, okay, sure. Not knowing that he had been planning this for 2 years. I think in the end, that's really what got Ohio U the most embarrassed, was the fact that they just handed some random kid their mascot uniform before they went to Columbus.
Okay, coming up, the blow-by-blow of when Rufus attacked Brutus.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Dave, this idea from Brandon Hanning, from Rufus, to have Rufus the Bobcat assault Brutus the Buckeye, this was not a spur-of-the-moment thing by any stretch. How did this plot take shape?
Basically, I think Brandon imagined it for 2 years. Brutus leads the whole entire OSU football team out onto the field. So there's 105,000 people in the horseshoe, and Brutus is the one who leads them out onto the field carrying this giant Ohio State flag. And again, going back to the genius of this plan, Rufus decided that if he could tackle Brutus in the middle of this act, then the entire team there would be sort of this like human car crash at the 50-yard line. They would all be falling all over each other and piling up at midfield. And so that was his plan. He was going to hover on the sidelines. And as soon as Brutus made his appearance, he would begin running toward midfield in his giant cat feet.
So what happens when Sean finally does get out there with the team as Brutus?
Sean, the way he described it was he from inside his giant nut head, and I'm like, walk me through what you're seeing. And he's like, well, I can't really see that much because I'm looking through the mouth of the mascot head, and out of the corner of my eye, I see Rufus. And he's staring me down. And it's kind of like, it's like a bad Broadway play. He's like, Rufus is giving me the eye. And as I get closer to the 50-yard line, Rufus just takes off running. And I realize the closer he gets, oh my God, okay, he's coming for me. Like, this is happening. He's going to try and tackle me. In the mascot world, the one thing you can't do is have your head come off. And so Rufus plans for 2 years to carry out this attack. He gets to midfield. His technique is not great. He kind of does a weak kind of side tackle instead of really just blowing him up, right? Mm. It's almost as if he lost his nerve a little bit. And he's sort of hanging on Brutus's back. And as Brutus is sort of shaking him off and trying to get free and keep the flag flying, Rufus sort of falls to the ground, and the cardinal sin of mascotting happens. His giant cat head falls off.
So this doesn't go exactly the way that Rufus planned. And after honor is restored and the head is back on, where does this all go?
Well, Rufus decides that he's not done yet. He's already sort of in for a dime, in for a dollar. He sees Brutus running away. He sees his glory going toward the north end zone of the horseshoe. And Rufus, God love him, he puts his cat head back on, brushes himself off, and takes off sprinting again for Brutus. There are great pictures of Rufus is sort of like tracking him down and sprinting. And it's almost like a bad car chase in a bad cop movie, but you can see him gaining speed. And then by the time he gets to the north end zone, he jumps on Brutus's back and eventually wrestles him back down to the ground.
How does this whole battle end?
They continue to kind of wrestle around in the end zone. And again, because this was 2010 and things had just begun going quote unquote viral, I think this is a really interesting part of this story is that in the moment, people now know what's going on. People are shooting pictures and taking video. And during their sort of like strange, really not that great wrestling match in the end zone, Rufus manages to sort of get his arm around Brutus's neck and punch him once really good right in the face, where he almost like collapses part of his Buckeye head. And this is an important lesson in going viral because that's the picture. Even though the entire attempt did not turn out as great as Rufus had hoped, that picture is what went viral. That picture is what is hanging in bars in Ann Arbor and on people's screensavers and fantasy football logos. And what people love about it is it's a takeoff of the old Ohio State band dotting the I. The caption is always, "Here you go, Brutus. I just dotted your Buckeye for you." Depending on whether you're an Ohio State fan or you like everyone else, the final moment of the fight was Rufus. He attempted one last low blow to Brutus that thankfully for everyone involved did not land.
So how did the authorities, and by that I mean the actual universities in question, how did they respond?
I talked to a guy who worked as an assistant SID for Ohio State at the time, and they were up in the press box, and it was like watching a wrestling match. People were like, "Whoa, no, oh my God." And they all basically had a good chuckle about it. Most people thought that it was may have been staged because most mascot fights are staged and prearranged. But this one wasn't. But they decided to just, they kept the mascots apart for the rest of the game. There weren't any more incidents. Nobody was hurt. So Ohio State was just like, whatever, it's fine. And I think everybody just kind of wanted to move on and have a good laugh. But
by now, everyone has seen the tape of the Ohio University mascot pummeling Brutus the Buckeye. Amazingly, the Ohio mascot wasn't even a student at Ohio and was apparently obsessed with bringing down Brutus. He said, quote, "The whole reason I tried out was so I could come up here to Ohio State and tackle Brutus," unquote.
Brandon, the day after, revealed that he wasn't a student anymore, that he had been planning this attack for 2 years. And I think what happened was, OU was embarrassed by the whole thing and ended up having to issue an apology.
Ohio State fans, how did they react if the authorities were sort of okay with moving on from it? Were they similarly emotionally situated?
This, again, God love them. They were, most of them did not take it as well as Brutus. There were calls for Brandon to be arrested. There were grad students at Ohio State that referred to him as Generation Y's version of the Unabomber.
Wow.
There were several attorneys. Sean, that week, got several solicitations from Columbus attorneys who wanted to help him press assault charges. So yeah, the Ohio State faithful did not think it was funny at all.
Where are Brandon and Sean now? And as I guess we get into like an actual Big Ten season, I'm just fascinated. Like, where do these particular characters in college football lore, where are they and how do they look back on this incident?
Well, again, I talked to Sean. Sean was great, and he actually never got to, again, here's another fascinating part of the world of mascots. At the time, Sean was forbidden. Brutus doesn't talk. And so he was sort of forbidden from weighing in or even saying that he was fine. And Sean took it very seriously and in fact, was, he was on partial scholarship, and he couldn't really fight back. That's the other thing people don't realize is he was worried about getting suspended if he fought back. So for the first time, 10 years later, really for the first time is when he got to weigh in about what he experienced and what it was like and the whole episode. But he is a sales rep for a business technology company in Columbus and has got a beautiful 7-month-old son. And he seems to be doing great. And again, the person who has the best perspective on this whole thing is Brutus. He still laughs about it and thinks the whole thing is hilarious.
And as for Brandon, our hero, what's he up to now?
I wish I could tell you that he had gone on to become like the Philly Fanatic or the San Diego Chicken or something like that. But I think in keeping with the beautiful, strange nature of this story, Brandon didn't want to talk about the episode.
Huh.
And so I may have set a new record for messages and text messages and voicemails and contacting family. But after weeks of trying to reach Brandon, he ghosted me. Rufus ghosted me. Again, another highlight for my career. but what we could find out about Brandon just through social media, on one of his social media accounts, he's listed Barbados as his residence.
Mm.
And on another, it mentions that he's training to be a tugboat captain, probably on the Ohio River. And honestly, perfect.
So you're saying there might be like a Shawshank Redemption kind of postscript to the beautiful trajectory of Rufus.
I'm not kidding. I'm sticking around until my 30th anniversary, and we will get, I vow to you right now, Pablo, I will get Brutus and Rufus together in a room.
Dave Fleming, thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
My pleasure, Pablo. Go out and attack this day like you were Rufus.
Up next, why I still believe in Fitzmagic, even if he's on the bench.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. If I could go back in time and give my college freshman self any two pieces of advice, I'd tell myself to step away from that Tupac poster in your dorm and figure out some way to buy stock in two things. First, that new website your friend Priscilla's very weird boyfriend Mark just made called the Facebook. And second, that clean-shaven junior quarterback you see around campus sometimes, called Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick lost his starting job with the Miami Dolphins yesterday, a fact that I continue to find stunning. I knew his replacement, rookie Tua Tagovailoa, was going to take his job at some point. Tua was the franchise quarterback, the number 5 overall pick. Fitzpatrick is the veteran seat warmer. But consider how cozy the now famously bearded 37-year-old has made that seat this season. His 3-3 Dolphins, who just blew out the 49ers and Jets, are in a playoff hunt in a wide-open AFC East. And the most advanced metrics, from QBR to EPA to CPOE, they all say that Fitzmagic has been playing like one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the entire NFL. Tua has thrown all of 2 passes, both on Sunday, for 9 yards total. But I should disclose something here. I am not rooting against Tua at all. And Fitzpatrick is not either. On Sunday, when Tua got into his first game since his hip injury a year ago, the man he calls a mentor was waving his arms, literally cheerleading. In fact, the real reason I want all that Fitzpatrick stock is also the real reason I am stunned by this sudden quarterback debate. I cannot believe that Ryan Fitzpatrick is still out here doing it 17 years after I first saw him, and doing it better than ever, actually. For all the turnover and turnovers in his career, it feels insane to me that he still matters this much in the NFL. Just imagine the arc of that stock chart from 7th round pick to more yards of total offense than all but 26 players ever, more than Steve Young, more than Jim Kelly. Fitzpatrick has thrown more touchdowns than all but 33 quarterbacks ever, more than Terry Bradshaw, more than Kurt Warner. And each of the eight teams he's played for over 16 seasons and counting seems to consider him not just a genuine leader, but one of the best human beings they've ever employed. ESPN's Cam Wolf quoted eight different people with Miami just last week, who all testified that Ryan Fitzpatrick is the single most beloved player in the Dolphins locker room right now. And right now, despite all of that, Ryan Fitzpatrick finds himself warming the bench. But you need not weep for Fitzmagic or sell your stock. Because if there is one thing I've learned after 17 years, it's that Fitzmagic is never over. He'll be back somewhere, some way, somehow. He always is. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.